So today's meeting theme is Road to Future, and we have two speakers here today, and Roncliffe from Netherlands. Welcome, and Lena from Norway. They will share their experience, strength, and hope with us. And Roncliffe, you will start, so welcome to the stage.
Okay. So this is my voice now after a weekend of convention and party and screaming. So, hello, my name is Roncliffe, I'm an addict from the Netherlands. Yesterday I had a conversation with him, and today I feel a grateful recovering addict. I never introduce myself that way, but today I'm gonna do it because I wanna do something different today. I can't hide anymore now, that's the thing, and I thought it would be less busy than it's now, so why are you still here? Okay. Well, nice. Thanks. Great to hear. I'm happy to see familiar faces, people I like, people I love. I mean, I love NA. That's the fact. That's a fact. And so funny, I came here with one of my best friends. I came up here to the venue this morning, and I'm looking at him now, yeah. I came here, and another friend, he welcomed me, and he said, well, nice that you're here. So you're gonna do your share this afternoon, right? I said, yeah. Are you nervous? Well, I'm getting there. And he said, well, this morning we had two so beautiful speakers, you know, I don't want to raise the bar too high for you, but they were really powerful, really strong. So thank you for that. what do I want to share? I was thinking preparing it, but I never prepare my share, so now I'm gonna do the same now and share from my heart, and I hope you guys feel that. That's the thing I would like to do. So probably you feel my anxiety now. You know, the theme Road to the Future, was it? Not for now, Road to the Future, and. And when I got it from the committee, thanks by the way, committee, I forget, I mean, you know, I'm so self-obsessed that I forget to thank at first the whole Finnish committee that organized this beautiful event. Yeah, sure. And especially Kai from the program committee. We had a good conversation on Friday. I got this topic, Road to the Future. And I came here with one of my best friends. We flew here on Thursday night, and it was quite late when we arrived here. And he asked me, like, okay, what is your share about? And I said, yeah, Road to the Future. And he looked at me and said, Road to the Future? I mean, I don't know that line from somewhere from the literature or something. And I said, no, me neither. I mean, I see these topics here the whole weekend, like journey continues, you know, enjoy life. And I can relate that to all these things I've read throughout the years in the literature. But I don't know if there are people here that know this text from somewhere. I'm curious, but I don't know, like Road to the Future. We started to talk, and we ended up like Road to the Future. I mean, I'm always on a road to the future. I mean, I'm here now, and the future is in the next moment. So, you know, I'm always on a road to the future. So we started to talk about, what does future mean? What does the future have? And we start to talk about like dreams and goals. And it really struck me, you know. During that conversation, you know, we came, like, me as a kid, and growing up, you know, and some dreams I had, and they, you know, they vanished throughout the years. getting an active addiction and goals, you know, goals I never, well, hardly reached any goals that I really wanted, you know. So that is the that's the story of my life, you know, my addiction. And what is it now? Like a little over a week ago, I celebrated my 17 years. So, thank you. And actually, I told myself I wasn't going to share, you know, my clean time because in a sense I don't feel that it really matters. But why I'm sharing it is that now being 17 in recovery, I have these active memories of being a young guy from 17 years old. And I could like look back and reflect on what did my life look like when I was 17, you know, growing up as a young guy. And what were my ambitions, you know, what were my goals or my dreams. And now, you know, again 17 in recovery, okay, what are they now? And it's so much different. There's so much difference. Short background. I mean, I grew. I have a mother and a father, obviously. My father is from Indonesia. He came to the Netherlands after the war. You know, Dutch colony, and you know they had to flee because of all the things that were going on. So, he came to the Netherlands, and my mother is like from. I don't exactly know the English word, but from like a circus background, you know, like travelers, circus, and they got together, and I'm the product. So, can you imagine? I mean, you know, my parents are twisted. I mean, they're sick. The addiction is all over my family. I mean, you know, they had terrible youth and all these things. So they passed that on to me, I have three sisters, one brother, one young sister, two older sisters, and an older brother. And we all have different fathers and different mothers. So it's kind of mixed up, but I am somewhere in the middle, you know. So from one side, I have the same mother and different fathers. And from the other side, I have the different same father and different mothers. So that's what I came from. And it really was confusing to me, you know, like, how does this work? And the strange thing in this, I don't know, maybe it's also a little bit with the Indonesian culture and with this travelers culture, you know, on the one hand, it's really, really tight bond. And on the other hand, it's really hateful. And that twist, you know, I was always living in between those two, how do you say it, extremes. So I remember, as far as I remember, you know, and my active memories go back to maybe 2-3 years old. I was such a frightened boy. I was really scared. I mean, I was really, really scared for my father. And in a sense, I don't know, I think I disgusted my mother in a way. Now, you know, working these steps and this having this recovery throughout the years, I know why I had those feelings. But then, I mean, I didn't know. It was just the way I felt. And from these feelings, I acted. So I was a really sneaky kid. You know, I'm verbally quite well. You know, when I was young, I was like a good-looking little boy. You know, I had this innocent face. So I could get away with a lot of things. And I used it. I mean, I used these things. And and that was, I mean, but that, I mean, as far as I can remember, it was all about surviving, you know, surviving this family, surviving school, surviving teachers, surviving other kids, I don't know, you know, it was all about the need to survive. So the honest truth, and that was, and then I come back to this conversation with my friend, the honest truth was that even from a little age, actually, I didn't have any dreams. I mean, I can't remember that I had dreams or ambitions. You know, it was just surviving. And but there was one thing, that I remember, because I'm quite smart. You know, so I was good in school. I mean, no, I didn't do anything in school, but I could go through easily. And I remember At some point, you know, you go from like elementary school to secondary school, I think that's the term, when 12 years of age. And you do this test and then you get a result and they give you an advice. And that. So I get like this this advice to, I don't know, highest level or something. And I remember then that I wanted to be a scientist. Yeah, I mean, I was interested in math and physics, you know, and nature and biology, you know, all these things. I was interested in that, you know, and so I wanted to be a scientist. And actually, that's the only thing I can remember having had any. I mean, I played for some years from little. I played rugby in a team, you know, rugby, and I was quite good in it, but. Never had, did I have this ambition, like, you know, to become the captain of the team, or you know, to play like in the Dutch rugby league or something. You know, so anyway, and I took that throughout my life. So for me, looking back, you know, the using of drugs, I mean, it wasn't a question. It was the only question was when, you know, when would I discover the drugs, and when would it take me, and. And what the thing is that, I mean, there's a little suggestion here that I don't mention drugs by the name, yeah, and and no other fellowships and no treatment and this. But what I can say is that from every drug I ever took up till today, I still remember that first moment. I remember that first time that I did. I remember how old I was, where I was, with whom I was, what I did, how it felt, and that is the key. How it felt. And the funny thing, well, yeah, now it's funny probably, but the thing is that every type of drug could give me a specific kind of feeling. You know, I can use the names. Huh? So anyway, there were some drugs that I feel like, I felt like courageous, you know? And I used some other drugs where I could feel really loving, you know, and there were some other drugs that I felt like, wow, you know, I'm intellectual, you know, so. Oh, I'm not the only one. Okay, thank you. So I started using drugs and did these things and you know, and it took me and until the moment that I got into recovery, you know, it was about surviving and more and more using. And I'm not going to go into all these things I did, but I'm happy that I'm still alive. That's one thing. And I'm happy that I never got into jail. I mean, yesterday in this tour, we went to this jail here in Helsinki. And a guy, I don't know where he is, but he shared his experience from being in the jail. And I looked at him and I said, well, the only thing that stands between us is the fact that I never got caught. And that's the only thing, nothing else. And so anyway, in my 30s, wasted life, and actually on the outside, I managed quite well. You know, I went up the ladder, I had a good job, and I was in a company car, and a few days a week, I wore a suit, you know. So on the outside, I looked like a successful young man. But at the inside, you know, on the inside, I totally felt lost. Lost, destroyed, alone, you know, and that was my reality. And I want to share that, but that the thing that got me in recovery, for me, wasn't desperation. I mean, we talk about the gift of desperation in our rooms. I didn't get that at that moment, you know. The reason that got me in recovery was that I had a girlfriend back then, and she threatened to leave me, you know. I was working in some kind of company, and they threatened to fire me. My family, you know, my mother and my stepfather, they had to raise their mortgage for several thousands of euros to pay debts for me, you know, so they were all. So it's all these external pressure in the end that made me think like, okay, you know what, I'm going to look for some treatment, and then they get off my back. You know, that was my real intention. So I started looking for some treatment, and I Googled, and I saw like treatment center 3 months there and there in the Netherlands near the seaside. So I thought, okay, I'm gonna go there. 3 months is a good time. I can take a rest a bit. I was like quite heavy, so I can lose some weight, get some color on my skin, and then I'm gonna go on. And I came in, And actually, I wished that they would teach me how to use to get the using in control again. I mean, that was what I really was expecting. I mean, no, I was hoping that. So hearing that, you know, total abstinence was the key, it was kind of a disappointment. Yeah, I didn't expect that. I mean, I tried a lot of things in my life, but, well, total abstinence? No, never thought about that. So in that sense, I came in, I didn't want to get clean. I come in and I always share this too. The first day I was in, I got in a fight with one of my roommates, you know, about some, I don't know, some bullshit thing. The second day, I tried to, how do you say it in English? Versieren? I tried to hit on the doctor. There was a beautiful woman, and you know, I had an intake with her, and I thought like, well, maybe, you know, when I got out of this treatment center, I'm going on a date with you, you know, I want to have your phone number. So, because I really thought that I was a good match, you know, at that point. Yeah, but the thing of it all is that I was in a relationship, right? I mean, so I've been cheating all my life until I got in this program. The third day I wanted to have a conversation with the staff because I didn't totally agree with the program they had. You know, I could think they could do it a bit different. Yeah, they were laughing at me too. Yeah. So that was me, you know, getting in here. You know, I was so arrogant, so full of pride, and false pride, and you know, and I was a man of the world, so I know you. I mean, they called me the consultant, you know, so I'm good in advice giving, especially on unquestioned advice. That's my specialty. So I got in, and the funny thing is that I came in, and since that day I stayed clean. So, thank you. Yeah, thank you. So, this program is so strong that it kept me clean against my own will. That's really the strength of the power of this program. And so I got to NA. Well, actually, I didn't get to NA the first weeks. I mean, we had to go there. That was like obligatory for going to the meetings. But I skipped them for a few weeks. And then my roommates, you know, they snitched on me. Motherfuckers, you know, they snitched on me. Now I know, you know, that they kept me out of my disease, right? I mean, you know, they put a hold on my disease. Then I felt that they were snitching me. I mean, this junkie pride. Yeah. So I went to these NA meetings, and to be honest, I didn't feel welcome. I mean, no, really. I mean, I feel the love here all the way, and I try to give it away in my own meetings. So. But myself, I didn't feel welcome in NA. I mean, people didn't come up to me and give me a hug. They didn't. They didn't ask for my phone number. They didn't. You know, so in that sense, I really didn't feel that I belong amongst you. You know, I find you like a strange bunch of people. I mean, I could understand that you guys were here and needed this here, but me, no. And now looking back, I know, you know, it was my arrogance. I mean, I'm not an aggressive guy, but I can have this air around me like, I don't need anybody, you know, I don't need you, I look down on you, I mean, whatever. So now I know that I wasn't that approachable, you know, and the good thing nowadays is, for me, is that I like these people in entering the rooms the most, you know, like with this, get the fuck away, you know, on their forehead. These are the people I like, I love them the most to approach, you know, and yeah, because it's all acting, right? I mean, we're fabulous actors. Well, I was a fabulous actor, still am, but then even more. I mean, so that's a big difference, you know. I didn't feel welcome, but what struck me was our literature. In the Netherlands, we have a habit like people coming in and we give them this introductionary guide, you know, the little white, and we write our phone numbers down. And so I got one at my first meeting and I took it home to the treatment center, and I started to read it. And actually it was this literature, you know, like this first 29 questions, I think, about, you know, me, am I an addict? or a different view, and, you know, and self-acceptance. Wow. I mean, for personally, I find that the most powerful and most deep literature I read in our literature, the pamphlet or the thing about self-acceptance. Because for me, this journey to the future, what is it, road to the future, actually it's all about self-acceptance. It's all about, for me, it's all about self-acceptance. And I find that hard, you know. I'm getting there. I heard other speakers share in the last days about healing and, you know, with substantial clean time, like going into trauma treatment and these things. And these messages, they give me hope, you know, because sometimes I feel I'm the only messed up teenager in here. You know, I really can feel, because I'm looking around, you know, and for sure my friends, I mean, I have a friend, he married like 2 years ago, and he's busy like with buying a house somewhere in the Mediterranean, you know, with his wife going there, and another best friend of mine, he has nowadays a family with a few little kids, you know. So looking around in these guys, I feel like, wow, you know, they're building up their lives, and I never had kids. I never wanted kids. I didn't get kids. I don't have kids. I'm still single, or single again after some years, and so in that sense, sometimes I can feel like, wow, everybody is doing better than me or something. What am I missing here? And so that comes all down to self-acceptance. Is the time? Okay. Yeah, I thought I would fill the time, but I probably will. I mean, the nerves are a bit down now, so I can talk more relaxed and more easy. Okay, this is the signal to wrap up. No, I haven't even shared, I think, about recovery, right? I got in. I found a sponsor. I mean, I did all these things that NA suggested here, you know. So, I did, and in that sense, I stayed clean up till today. And what I wanted to share, like these dreams, these goals, you know, the difference between then and now. I had this when I was younger. I had this dream to earn a lot of money. For example, I wanted to be rich. You know, that was my goal for the future. Rich. I didn't know how, but that. Now I'm in this program, and I have other goals. You know, I have a goal like I want to be the best son I can be for my father and my mother. You know, and my stepfather. He has Parkinson, so he went into treatment center. Nowadays, I would like to be the best friend I can be to my friends. I mean, I think I fail in some moments, but that's what I'm trying, you know. Also, that's maybe a funny goal, but I have a goal to die as a vegan. Truly, yeah. I mean, I come from a meat eating background, you know, but because of, you know, all this generation coming after, you know, after us, I feel like I have to eat less meat and these things. So, and in the end. No animal suffering anyhow. So I want to die as a vegan. That is a new goal. I mean, I couldn't have imagined that I would ever have that as a goal before I get into the oven, right? You know, die as a vegan. thank you. Yeah. Oh yeah, we're in Finland, huh? That's quite emancipated, yeah. So these things, I mean, these. Another thing is, 2 years ago, I quit my job, I sold my house, and I went traveling, you know, and I'm still doing that in a sense, but I'm back now in The Hague, in the Netherlands, but what I feel, in the future, I want to have a tiny house or something, you know, so really my goals are like trying to get more minimalistic, you know, not consume so much, and, you know, and because I care about future generations nowadays. I don't have kids my own, but I think about the kids for my friends, you know. What can I bring to give them a better future? So for me, I guess that's one of the things that I find for myself, you know, that I'm a spiritual guy nowadays, you know, for these kind of things. Yeah, I mean, and I can appreciate myself for that. So yeah, it's I could share much more. I mean, like, it's half an hour is quite quick, I imagine now. But yeah, I mean, like, closing. I sometimes use an example. I have a friend that I grew up with. He was my best friend for more than 20 years. We met each other as little boys, and, you know, having friendship ended as junkies. I had to, you know, I had to get away from him because of the safety of my recovery. Hurt a lot. And actually now, a few weeks ago, I met him again. You know, we got in contact after 15 years or so. And the funny thing is, I called him, and I get him on the phone, and the first thing he said to me, "You sound different." And I mean, maybe to you it doesn't mean anything, but to me, to hear that from this guy that I was like, was my best friend for years, hear him say, "You sound different," to me, that is the proof that I have changed. That's the proof for me, you know. And the funny thing was, of course, he was my best friend, so I tried to get him in NA, you know, get him in recovery, and find out recovery together and this new way of life and enjoying and go to conventions and all these things. It didn't went that way. He came to me. He came with me like once or twice. And wow, that's for you, not for me. So I met him 3 weeks ago. I didn't mention anything about, you know, just we had a conversation. How are you now? I mean, we haven't spoken for 15 years. How's your life now? How's my life now? And before I went, went away, he looked at me and he said, "I don't know, maybe we can go together to an NA meeting." Yeah, and I guess that's how it works, right? I don't try to enforce it on anybody. I just show what I do, and yeah. And if he, you know, he wants to have what I have to offer, he can come and get it, right? That's how it works. So I think my 5 minutes or my 30 minutes in total are gone. I mean, funny, when I came here, I was scared of you all. But now I look at you, and I know, and now I all like you. So this is, yeah, thank you. This is how my mind works, right? In like 20 minutes from like being scared, I start to like you. So. So I would suggest, like all people here, take a tape, send it to the program committee for next year, ECNA, and come be a speaker on the Rotterdam convention. Yeah. So I can tell now from my personal experience that it's humbling, and I feel a bit more courageous than when I woke up this morning. So thanks for listening, and I hope to all see you next year. Yeah.
Thank you.